morning. I'm Barb Adams. I'm your worship associate this morning. I have an announcement to read. Attention men, you would like to form a temporary men's choir to perform a fun song for the Mother's Day service on May 10th. Rehearsals would take place from 11:30 a.m. to 12:15 p.m. for three Sundays, April 19th, 26th, and May 3rd. We'd also like to meet at 9 a.m. on May 10th to warm up before the service begins. Please contact Michelle Hoyt or Nancy Bratt as soon as possible if you and your sons are interested in joining. Also, Claire Johnson has an announcement.
Good morning. As chair of LCUC's Public Presence Committee, I am happy to report that we are going to have a vote for the new church logo. There are four or five choices which have been previously board approved for a logo, and there will be an official ballot cast vote on April 15th, which all members of the church can participate in. So we will look forward to the vote, and we will have the choices of the logos up very soon. Thank you.
We all enter this world born from a fusion of cells, rich or poor, all races under the sun. We begin as a simple flowering, a binary yes in the darkness. Come into this sacred space where every life has worth, where every yes can be heard. Come, let us worship here together. Please take just a moment to say hello or to introduce yourself to your neighbor.
In the gray hymn books, 128, for all that is our lot. Welcome to Lake Country Unitarian Universalist Church. At LCUUC, we work to surround this community with a spirit of love in everything we do. My name is Barb Adams, and I'm the worship associate for this morning service. As a welcoming congregation, we hope that all visitors, friends, and members, wherever they are on life's journey and whatever their backgrounds, will find a lasting home here. Please join us for refreshments and conversation in our social hall after the service. And while you're there, stop by the welcome table to find out more about LCUUC. Today's order of service includes announcements of upcoming church activities, and we look forward to everyone joining in. Like and follow Lake Country Unitarian Universalist Church on Facebook in order to get ongoing information about activities, and check out our webpage at lcuuc.org to stay current on services and events. Please take a moment at this point in service to silence all electronics you may have here with you today. And again, Welcome to all here this morning. We are so pleased that you have chosen to celebrate and worship with us.
Of all the feelings that a young person can have, there is one that makes life seem desolate, empty, and sometimes not even worth living when it is not there.
Hope.
Hope for the future, hope to be loved, hope to be heard. When children are without hope, they are robbed of one of the most defining parts of their childhood. We must never underestimate the power of giving hope to a child.
The whispers of my heart speak so softly. Are they really there if no one hears them? My voice is so small and so soft. Can you hear me? Give us hope and we'll show you the way.
Very simple.
One of the ways that we bring hope to our community is by contributing to the local food pantries, both financially and by collecting non-perishable items. So if you've brought food items to share, please bring them forward at this point in the service, or have a child bring them forward. The basket is up here. And I invite the children to stay up front and enjoy a story. Well, good morning. This morning's story is called The Excruciatingly Scrupulous Twins. And those are some pretty big words. Does anybody know what excruciatingly means? Painfully, annoyingly, and scrupulous. That means you want things exactly right, and you won't stand it if something is just a little bit off. So let's talk about these guys, because they don't sound very friendly or fun. Once upon a time, not very long ago, and in a place not very different from this, there were a pair of twins named Tim and Tom, and they looked exactly the same. Same height, same eye color, same weight. And they wanted everything in their lives to be exactly the same, too. So they were always fair with each other, excruciatingly, scrupulously fair. Now, how many of you all have other little siblings, big brothers, big sisters? All right. A lot of you. When your mom and dad divide stuff, or when your moms or your dads divide stuff, are they always exactly scrupulously fair? What happens if they're not? What happens if your brother or sister's half the cupcake is bigger than yours? What do you do?
Cry.
Good answer. Take their half. All right, you muggers. Well, for these twins, Tim and Tom, everything had to be fair no matter what. So if Tom got a new pencil, Tim had to have a new pencil. Same length, same color, same sharpness. If Tom bit his, Tim bit his. If Tom broke his, Tim would look around and break his and throw it away just so he'd get a new one too. If Tim got a new skateboard, Tom had to have one. Why don't you just take turns? His father said, you never want to ride at the same time. Oh, no. Uh-uh. Not the same as having your own, which meant it wasn't fair. They were always careful to be fair, excruciatingly, scrupulously fair. In the morning at breakfast, they counted the flakes of cereal in their bowl. Can you imagine counting your cornflakes or your Cheerios? They measured one half cup of milk for their cereal, and if Tim had three strawberries, Tom had to have three, even though Tom didn't like strawberries. But he had to have three because that was exactly scrupulously fair. And then he had to eat them, which was scrupulously gross. Why don't you share, their mother said. Why don't you have peaches instead of strawberries? You don't like strawberries. But sharing wasn't the same as having, and it wasn't fair. The twins knew about sharing. They slept in the same bedroom. They had to share that. And they did, excruciatingly and scrupulously. They put a line of tape right down the middle of their bedroom to split it exactly in half. And on one side of the room were a bed and a dresser and a desk, and on the other side were exactly the same ones. in exactly the same color. Even though Tim didn't like that color very much, and he actually wanted pink, but his brother wanted the gray, and so that's what they got. Luckily, the tape went through the exact center of the door so they could both get out, because it wouldn't be fair to have to use the other one's door. Even if they did have to turn sideways and not breathe and suck in their bellies to squeeze through their half of the door. But one side of the room had a window and the other didn't, so their bedroom wasn't fair. And sometimes, no matter how hard they tried to make every single thing in their lives fair, they couldn't. Tom could run faster and Tim could do cartwheels. Tom was good at math and Tim was good at spelling. And no matter how much they exercised or how hard they studied, they weren't identical, and it wasn't fair. Life isn't fair, said their father, but that wasn't fair. Things ought to be fair, and things ought to be even and equal. And things weren't. And neither were their parents. Go study your spelling, said their mom the night before the spelling test. But she only said it to Tom. How come Tim doesn't have to study? That's not fair. Their mom looked at him and said, because he knows how to spell all the words. But it's not fair. You're right. And that's the way it is, so go study. You flunked your spelling test. He got an A. It's not fair. Tom remembered that had been all the test with all those hard words and some tricky ones, and it was stupid, and he didn't care. Go study, their mom said. Because his mom cared, and his dad cared, his teacher cared. So Tom got out his spelling book, and he slammed it down on the table, but he didn't open it. He poked at it with his pencil, only he had to check to make sure Tim still had the same length. And he poked. Tim sat down, too, but with a picture to color. Tom made a face at him. Tim made the face back, so that was fair. But it didn't make Tom feel better. You want help? Tim said. Tom just sat there for a minute. You'd help me? Well, sure, if you want. But you already did your spelling. It's not fair for you to have to do it again. His brother said, but that's okay. I don't mind helping you. Tim had to think about it for a minute, and he finally said, okay, thanks. And you know, 2 days from now, we're going to have a math test. So tomorrow, I can help you. Hey, yeah, that would make it fair, said Tom. It would be fair tomorrow, but even more important than that, Tim decided that it was nice right now. It wasn't exactly scrupulously fair, wasn't even, wasn't equal, but it was nice. And maybe it was more important to be nice than it was to be exactingly, scrupulously fair. So the next time you don't feel like counting your Cheerios, or the half the cupcake you get is a little bit smaller. No mugging. Maybe it's okay to be nice rather than fair. Thank you for listening to my story. And I'm going to ask my lantern bearer to come up, and we're going to light the lantern. May the light and love of our chalice lead you today and every day. And if you all would please help me in singing the children to their classrooms, the words are written in your order of service, and the song is called For You Shall Go Out in Joy. Top 10 signs that it is time to increase your giving. Number 10, the church organist has put a goldfish bowl for tips out on the piano. Number 9, parking meters have been installed in the church parking lot 10-minute increments. Number 8, you come to church to find that someone has repossessed your choir loft. Number 7, pews in the front are now $1, pews in the back $10. Please pay the minister for being seated. Number 6, the minister can only afford a bathrobe and a string of Mardi Gras beads rather than robes and a stole. Number 5, there's a split the pot drawing at the end of every service. Number 4, offering plates have been replaced with large steel wash tubs. Number 3, the pastor's husband is wearing a shirt made from a plastic tablecloth. Number 2, the candlelight service is no longer just for effect. And number 1, Coffee Hour now has a cover charge and a 2-drink minimum. The morning offering will now be given and received. Thank you so much for these gifts given and received for the life and the work of this community. This is the time in our service where we share together our joys and our concerns. Before the service, you are always welcome to come up to the candle table and to silently light a candle. But at this point, we speak aloud and we light candles together. Would anyone who has a joy or a concern to share, please raise your hand, and our ushers will bring you a microphone. And I would like to light the first candle for the joy of all the wonderful folks who have helped this week on the choir loft remodel, rip out, and general make it nice sessions. So thank you to everyone. Thank you especially to Phil Smith, who is leading this parade, for Kirsten Johnson, who is also leading this parade. Thank you all so much, and thank everyone who has come and worked their tails off this week.
Hi, my name is Helen. If you could please light a candle for Lisa Zimmerman. She's going through a number of health issues, and they're severe at this time. She's with our Girl Scouts.
I'd like to light a candle of concern for my mom, too. Mom was hospitalized this past week twice. She's just having some serious pain issues, and she's out right now and feeling okay, but keep her in your good thoughts. We light our last candle today for all of those joys and all of those sorrows that we feel deeply, but which have not been voiced here today.
Our first reading today is from the book of Luke in the Christian Bible. It tells the story of the Annunciation of Mary, the mother of Jesus of Nazareth. The following month, God sent the angel Gabriel to Nazareth, a village in Galilee, to a virgin, Mary, engaged to be married to a man named Joseph, a descendant of King David. Gabriel appeared to her and said, "Congratulations, favored one. The Lord is with you." Confused and disturbed, Mary tried to think what the angel could mean. "Don't be frightened, Mary," the angel told her, "for God has decided to wonderfully bless you. Very soon now you will become pregnant and have a baby boy, and you are to name him Jesus. He shall be very great and shall be called the Son of God. And the Lord God shall give him the throne of his ancestor David, and he shall reign over Israel forever. His kingdom shall never end." Mary asked the angel, "But how can I have a baby? I am a virgin." The angel replied, "The Holy Spirit shall come upon you, and the power of God shall overshadow you. So the baby born to you will be utterly holy, the Son of God. Furthermore, 6 months ago, your Aunt Elizabeth, the barren one they called her, became pregnant in her old age. For every promise from God shall surely come true." Mary said, "I am the Lord's servant, and I am willing to do whatever he wants. May everything you said come true." And then the angel disappeared. Here ends the first reading.
This is a prayer for all children everywhere. We wish for you a storm or two that you may enjoy the calm. We wish for you tranquility in time of trial. We wish you a cool breeze on a warm day and pale white clouds that you may better appreciate the blueness of the sky. We wish you darkness so that you might see the stars. We wish you anticipation of high adventure, and we wish you the courage to avoid battle. We wish you a sense of wonder and poetry and music. We wish you companionship so that you may too appreciate solitude. We wish you a friend who will understand you, and understanding so that you may have a friend. We wish you may become all that you wish to be and more than you hope you can be. We wish you a flower to smell, a hand to touch, a voice to cheer, a heart to gladden, and we wish you someone to love as we promise to love you. Please join me in a silent moment of meditation or the spirit of silent prayer.
Praying Like a Woman by Nicholas Lee. There are ancient texts in the scriptures that for centuries have been used to terrorize and victimize women. They do not cry out against women's abuse, misery, abuse, and pain. These are the texts of terror. These are the texts that have taunted and terrorized us. These are the texts that have silenced us and ravaged us. These are the texts over which we have wrestled, ranted, wept, and raged. Should we remember Hagar, Tamar, Jephthah's daughter, and Lot's? Should we tell of their wretched lives to our daughters? Should we speak on our lips the tales of torture, misery, abuse, and violence? Would we do better to consign them to silence? We will listen, however painful the hearing, for still there are women the world over being raped, being whipped, being sold into slavery, being shamed, being silenced, being broken, being beaten, treated as worthless, treated as refuse, until there is not one last woman remaining who is a victim of violence. We will listen and we will remember. We will rehearse the stories and we will renounce them. We will weep and we will work for the coming of time when not one baby girl will be abandoned because of her gender. Not one girl will be used against her will for another's pleasure. Not one young woman will be denied the chance of an education. Not one mother will be forced to abandon her child. Not one woman will have to sell her body. Not one crone will be cast off by her people and left to die alone. Listen then in sorrow. Listen in anger. Listen to the text of horror. And let us commit ourselves to working and praying for justice for a world in which such deeds may never happen again. Here ends the second reading. Please rise in body or spirit and join in singing number 1014 in the teal hymnal, Standing on the Side of Love.
Thank you.
Growing up, I heard the Annunciation story many, many times, and it never occurred to me until I was a teenager that it wasn't just the story of the wonder of being told you are going to give birth to Jesus. It was also the story of a young woman being told, hey, you don't have a voice in this. By the way, you're going to have a baby, and there's nothing you can do about it. More than 16 million children in the U.S. this year, and that's about a quarter of our entire nation's children, will live in families with incomes below the federal poverty level. And that poverty level is $23,550 to support a family of four. Now, I don't know how much money anybody in here makes or what you're used to having or what you grew up with. But $23,550 to support a family of four is sickening. That is just a defined mark that we use as if somehow making $24,000 a year will, of course, cover all the expenses for two adults and two children. The National Center for Children in Poverty found that on average, families of four actually need an income of about $43,000 to live reasonably, where on a daily basis they don't have to say, no, 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 we don't have the money. No, no, you can't do that. Using this more realistic measure, it's not a quarter of our children that live in poverty, but a frightening 43 to 45% who could be considered low income. That seems a very long way away from a 13-year-old wealthy Jewish girl standing in Nazareth over 2,000 years ago and being told by an angel that she was going to have a baby. I don't know about you, but let's face it, message by angel seems like something that you can only buy on Sky Mall or somewhere where the Hilton shop, not something real accessible to most of us. Angels just don't show up for most mothers and babies today, not for 43% of them. For about one in four births or more, what happens is about as far from angelic as you can get. There is no annunciation. Let's talk about real people. Dorothy gave me permission to tell her story. She is a real person, raised in a rural town by parents who farmed. She never learned about sex. She never had access to birth control. She started working at her parents' field when she was 7 or 8, cooking dinner for mom and dad by the time she was 12. At 15, she only knew she was pregnant when she turned sideways and her mother saw her stomach. Because her 15-year-old boyfriend had told her, of course you can't get pregnant if you're standing up. She hadn't even started her period yet. No clue what was going on. She apparently got pregnant the first go-run of that cycle. First her mom yelled at her, and then her dad yelled at her, and then they threw her out. So Dot dropped out of school. She was 16 by then. She went to work in a nursing home. She made minimum wage. By 21, she had 5 children and was living in a 2-bedroom trailer parked illegally in someone's cornfield. Electricity came from a line run from a nearby barn. Water was from an illegal well that friends had sunk, carried to the trailer in a 10-gallon drum and then boiled. Heat came from her wood-burning stove, and she chopped the wood. The toilet emptied into a bucket under the floor, and she dumped it into a cesspit daily and added a scoop of lime. She couldn't afford health insurance for herself, though she worked in health care, and so her boyfriend left when she refused to sleep with him for fear she'd get pregnant one more time, because no angels came each time she got pregnant. She couldn't afford to drive, so each day she walked 1.5 miles to a co-worker's house to get a ride to work. The co-worker could have picked her up but told her she wanted $1 gas money. Dorothy didn't have $1 gas money. She had WIC. There was some food in the house, but never enough. Food stamps do not pay for soap and shampoo and toilet paper, baby wipes. They don't pay for pacifiers. Her children grew up in grinding poverty. They ate cornstarch with water and sugar packets added for breakfast at home because it fills your belly. They had pancakes made from flour and water for dinner. They ate scraps she brought home from the nursing home kitchens. They hunted and fished out of season. On days she worked, Dorothy got free meals because she was working. You'd think that would be great because she got to eat. But you'd be wrong. Her kids waited at home for those free meals that she would carefully scrape into Tupperware that she brought with her. And she'd bring them home, and they would have supper. Sometimes she would tell the kids she didn't care for the way the cook seasoned things. Other times she would tell them stories about an incredible large meal someone had brought for her at work. And ask the kids, hey, would you do me a favor? I brought you the leftovers. Would you mind eating these? The truth was, she never ate. Little bits that she could scavenge here and there. Sometimes parts of the trailer would collapse or rot away, and they would repair it with pressed tin boards they scavenged from nearby barns and sheds. She and her five kids. And every once in a while, school fees would be due, or another teacher would send another note about the shoes or the clothes or the smell. And she would have to go to a payday lender trailing five small children behind her. If you don't know about payday lending, you need to. It's a small loan secured by a person's next paycheck, typically for 14 to 30 days. They're illegal in some states. The interest rates are staggering. For a 14-day, $100 loan, the interest due is $15. Work out the math on that. A normal loan, what you would owe after that time would be, give, take, 18 to 37 cents. You can turn the loan over just by paying the interest. That gives you another 14 days. Sounds great, doesn't it? You don't have to pay it back. People keep these loans turning over for months. There are lots of ways to calculate annual percentage rate of a loan, so depending on what method you use, Dorothy pays for that $15 on a $100 loan an APR anywhere from 391% to 3,733% for the way some companies handle this. This is legal. This is what the poor pay. This is what their children see. According to a study by the Pew Charitable Trust, most payday loan borrowers are white, female, 25 to 44. But after you control for everything else, there are five groups that have the odds of using one of those loans without a four-year degree. Home renter, African American, earning before $40,000. And separated or divorced, and they are used to cover everyday expenses. This isn't when the car breaks down. This is that the kids can't eat flour one more time. The average borrower turns their loan over for 5 months. 5 months at that interest rate. As Unitarian Universalists, we hear about conditions in Haiti or the Philippines or Guatemala, and it's hard to imagine that children here, babies here, live under some of those same almost unbearable conditions. According to the World Bank, you are in extreme poverty if you are short of food for all or part of the year, eating only one meal per day, sometimes choosing between feeding your child and feeding yourself. Sometimes you can't do either. You can't save money. If a family member falls ill and you need money to see a doctor, you have nothing to eat. You may have to borrow from a local money lender, and he will charge you so much interest that as the debt continues to mount, you will never be free. You can't afford to send your children to school, or if they do start, you may have to take them out again. You live in an unstable house made with mud or thatch that you need to rebuild every 2 or 3 years or after a bad storm. You have no source of safe drinking water. You have to carry your water a long way, and even then it makes you ill if you boil unless you boil it. Dorothy and her kids could tell you about every item on that list, and they are not alone. Inner city families do the exact same thing, except their water comes from a spigot down the street. And they're not rebuilding the outer walls of a trailer. They are putting cardboard against the walls of an apartment in Milwaukee, in Cincinnati, in Dayton, Philadelphia. But growing up poor, growing up in a world that not only doesn't herald your birth with angels, but undermines your very survival, it doesn't stop mattering when you get older or when you get a little bit of money. It doesn't automatically fix itself magically. Dorothy's a grandmother today, and her son Braden isn't doing a good job as a father. He doesn't understand why his girlfriend, who has a very good job, wants to do stupid things, according to him. Things like buying the baby an Easter basket for Easter, when she could have just waited till the day after and got everything for 25%. He doesn't understand birthday presents. He doesn't understand Halloween costumes. He doesn't understand buying a big pack of toilet paper for $12 when you could buy one roll for $3. Three is less than 12. It's better. He doesn't understand that it's really okay to buy good meat, not from the markdown basket, or organic vegetables, or new clothing because you like the color. Children born into poverty grow up in a world where food stamps and food pantries only happen at intervals. You can't go every day. Your food stamps reload one time a month. So you buy everything as soon as your stamps come in and you have your food bank day, and fresh food spoils. So you don't get that much. You get high sodium packaged things that last. You get cheap high carb foods that fill you up. Ramen, 18 cents. Generic macaroni and cheese, 23 cents. And you can feed a family of four on that. It's pitiful to watch, but you can do it. These foods fill you up and they make you gain weight, so you weigh 300 pounds and you are still malnourished. And you are 11 years old and you go to school with your round face and your jiggling legs, and the kids pick on you because your feet stink and your rotten shoes. You get canned and frozen and microwavable, and that only works if you have somewhere to store the food. If you don't, then you learn to sell your food stamps for 50 cents on the dollar. Not so you can buy booze and drugs, but so that you can buy food from somewhere hot, which you're not allowed to do. And once you grow up, good food tastes bad. Because all you know is what you were raised on. You don't know what food should taste like. You don't know what the texture of vegetables is supposed to be. You don't know what it should smell like. You don't know how to cook it. But it's not just good food that's unfamiliar to a poor child. Money doesn't work the same way. Children born into poverty learn how to operate on a budget that zeroes out every month. A budget where there is never enough. Children born into poverty don't have Christmas and birthday parties and Easter baskets in many places. Instead, they have refund day, and I am not joking. That's the day the IRS refund checks arrive, and for a few days, everybody is rich. Dorothy's daughter used to get told, "It's not your turn for Christmas this year. Wait till refund day." Because, you see, they would trade it off. Three kids at a time could have Christmas. Sometimes it just wasn't your year. Otherwise, there was so little money that you couldn't even buy anything. But if you did it three at a time, the rest could wait till refund day. But everyone only gets rich for a few days around refund day. Because when you are very poor, you don't learn how to manage that money. You learn how to survive on no money. There's a big difference. And when that money comes into your life, you spend it fast on all the things you've been meaning to get before it disappears just to make ends meet $30 here, $50 there. When you're poor, you can't always afford to think that this money could pay your bills for 6 months, pay your rent ahead. Often you have to think about every big purchase you are going to need all year and knowing you will not have the money when it goes on sale. Knowing that you do not have a bank account, that you do not have a credit card so that you can order online. You buy now at whatever price because it's when you can get it. And some of the things you buy are overcompensation because it's the one time a year that your children get anything. And for a child, it's the one time a year that you see mom with $5,000 or $6,000 or $9,000 all at once. So children learn to get and give gifts of solid gold necklaces, expensive electronics, guitars, designer clothing, motorbikes, designer bags, $50 manicures, $500 tattoo gift certificates. And this is normal. Poor children grow up in a world where every cent matters 11 and a half months of the year. They know having $10 means you can eat all week and $7 means you are not eating on one day. You don't have about 10 bucks in your wallet. You have $8.61. Because the difference is two packs of cheap buttock lunch meat. You know that difference. They become adults, hypersensitive to exact amounts. Adults who aren't comfortable at work. Oh yeah, just split the check. They can't do that. They agonize over tracking their daily balance, even when there's not any need anymore. Adults who only spend with short term in mind. Adults who miss sales on staples and wear their clothing until it falls into shreds. Adults who don't do well in that professional world because they can't make the leap to maybe buying everybody a coffee once in a while or going out to dinner with folks. They may have the money now. They can't bear to spend it. They skip over great two-for-one deals on the soap they use every day because they've still got a week left on that soap and they get paid on Friday. And you might need that $3. Poverty becomes a way of life and annunciation doesn't happen. No angels show up to a pregnant 15-year-old and tell her, rejoice, rejoice, it is going to be okay. That part is up to us. We are the hope. That part is up to every one of us who believes that no child should be doomed to fail. No child should go to bed hungry. No child should be ashamed to go to school because their clothing is falling apart. No child should be without blankets in the cold. No child should be without a home. Be those angels. I ask you to stand by every teenage girl terrified as she finds out she is going to have a baby much too young. To stand by every young man trying to figure out what it means to be a father. To stand up for everyone trying to raise a child with too little money and too much work. To stand up for everyone who wants to do the best for their baby and has no idea how to do it. To be there for every person trying to stop the cycle of poverty, but unable to break free from what they have learned. I want you to make a commitment to every child in every battered trailer, hotel, shelter, near empty apartment, to every child who is eating starch for breakfast and nothing for supper, be their angel. Be the voice who would have called for their birth. Be their angel. Fight against poverty. Fight against all the things that poverty does to children. Help to make a place for these children in the world. Help to make a place for the adults that they become. Learn about poverty. Know it when you see its effects on people you work with. Figure out the why. Give them a little more space. Don't look away. Today's last hymn is a Melanie Demore song called Standing Stone. It's very simple. The words are printed in your order of service, and it is only two lines, and we're going to do it multiple times. I'm going to sing it through so you can hear it, and I ask this. Sing this song as a commitment, as a vow you make to all the children suffering in abject poverty in Milwaukee, in Wisconsin, in America. I will be your standing stone. I will stand by you. I will do nothing to make your life worse. I will make it better when I can. I'm going to start singing, and when you feel ready, when you are ready to do what you can to at least understand the effects of poverty, help to wipe them out, please stand up and join me. And we're going to go through it a few times. It's a beautiful meditation on what it means to be an ally. Sing it for those children who angels will never herald. Sing it for all those who need someone to be there, someone to help, someone to see the pain in their lives and in some way make it better. Hear what the words say. I will be your standing stone. I will stand by you. I will not look away. I will not refuse to see you. I will be your standing stone. I will stand by you. And it goes like this. I will be your standing stone. I will stand by you. Very simple. I will be your standing stone. I will stand by you. I will be your standing stone. I will stand by you. I will be your standing stone. I will stand by you. I will be your standing stone. I will stand by you. I will be your standing stone. I will stand by you. I will be your standing stone. I will stand by you. I will be your standing stone. I will stand by you. Amen. Go out and help to create a world where every parent can be told, congratulations, favored one. Stand. Peace, and may it be so.
Sir.